Well, greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on climate change right after this. Hey, you know, if you're earning $50,000 a year and you pay all of your 14 taxes, you get to keep 41% of what you create and produce. Your government gets 59%. That's about $20,000 for you and $30,000 for the government. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, let's suppose you think your share isn't enough for you. Then why don't you work twice as hard and produce twice as much and make $100,000 next year? Then go ahead and pay your same 14 taxes just like you did this year. And you're going to net about 25%, and the government will net 75%. That works out to you work twice as hard and produce twice as much, and you net 8% more take-home pay. You produce twice as much, and you get 8% more than you did this year. Now, that's why I contend there ought to be something more intelligent for you and I to do than to work to put ourselves into the top 5% of income earners and then only net 25% of it. Why don't you call today and order our free general law CD package, and let me tell you how to deal with that kind of crime. It's 4 hours of entertaining information, and it answers many of your legal questions about taxes and why it is we pay so much and receive so little. Let me show you how to do just that in our Tax and Status School, which is now available on compact disc for built homeschooling. To order your free general law CD package, just call direct and ask for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, you can go on our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, our Tax and Status School is also available on compact disc for adult homeschooling. Why don't you call right now before you forget? Climate change. Have you heard about global warming, CO2 emissions, carbon tax, greenhouse gases? Well, the Senate is about to vote, and the House just did this past week, on this new carbon tax. And a story came out in the International Forecaster. Let me share it with you. And then we'll start our discussion with what kind of impact is this going to have upon you and me over the years to come. It's no longer a question of, well, is there going to be a carbon tax? That's a foregone conclusion. Once it was passed in the House, 219, I think, to 215, close, but no cigar. It's a shoe-in in the Senate. They've got 60 votes in the Senate. The president is the guy that proposed this program. So there's little doubt, but it's going to be enacted into law. It's been a long time coming. Back in the Clinton years, Al Gore wrote a book, remember, that dealt with this thing of climate change. It had something to do with an inconvenient truth, I think it was, he said, an inconvenient truth. And there's very little truth in this climate change BS, but just for academic work or academic use, I guess we ought to study it and find out how is that going to impact upon you and I, Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. Well, the House did it. They succumbed to the biggest tax increase in history. Pause. This tax increase outdoes anything ever that's ever been enacted in the history of the United States. This is the biggest tax increase. And I want to point out that we're going to increase taxes at the very same time that we're now experiencing the biggest depression in the history of the United States. In fact, it's bigger than the 1930s. They're now going back to 1876 to draw new parallels to the downturn that we're experiencing. And the Obama administration's solution is, we're going to give you the biggest tax increase in the history of the country. Now, maybe that's the right elixir. And I'm not here to argue with anybody and say, well, this is a bad move. I'm just a reporter here to report that every act has a consequence. When you raise taxes, when you pass legislation, there's going to be an outcome. Somebody's going to have to pay the tax. And when you have to pay the tax, it's going to be a cause and effect relationship. So we ought to take a look at that. See if we can't figure out, well, how is that going to impact upon me and my family? So number one, this is the biggest tax increase in the history of the United States. It's called the American Clean Energy and Security Act, and it passed 219 to 212, a disgrace to our country. The worst legislation since CAFTA, NAFTA, and the Income Tax and the Federal Reserve Act combined. Remember, this is the author. This is Robert Chapman now, who's making his observations. I don't know if it's as bad as or worse than CAFTA, NAFTA, the Income Tax, and the Federal Reserve Act. I'll leave that for you to decide. Again, I'm just a reporter bringing it to your attention. trillions more in taxes and millions of job losses will be the result. A 1,200-page piece of legislation that not one congressman or congresswoman has read. That's quite an indictment. That's reminiscent of that Patriot Act, you know, enacted back in 03 or 02 when George Bush presented it, 1,300 pages, nobody ever read it, voted for it, never read it. Now, it would seem like to me that if you were hired to be a senator or representative, that the first order of business ought to be that you at least read the legislation that's proposed before you vote on it. Or let me ask you this, honest to God, do you believe that you can intelligently vote on a piece of legislation that you haven't even read? Well, evidently 535 members of Congress believe that that's the way it ought to be done. So I'm not here to tell you whether or not that's good or bad or right or wrong. I just want to point out that that's the way that game is being played. So my senator here, Kit Bond, does not know what's contained in the bill. I don't know whether he voted for it or not, or whether he's going to. He hasn't yet, but I don't know whether he's going to or not. And then, of course, our representatives, you know, Roy Blunt's one of our reps. Did he vote for it or not? Can't tell you. It was a close vote. He probably voted against it. But the moral to the story is it passed. That's the thing that counts. It's not who voted against it. It's the fact that it passed. So you got trillions more in taxes and millions of job losses. It's a 1,200-page piece of legislation. Not one congressman read it. If allowed to be passed in the Senate, it'll be the greatest economic threat to Americans in history. Costs to Americans will be 20% of disposable income. Just take a look at your disposable income, whatever it happens to be. It's going to take 20% of it. An increase in gasoline tax of 77 cents a gallon. They missed their target. They were shooting for $1 a gallon. They missed it by 23 cents. Now, if history is any example to the future, this 77-cent gasoline tax will probably work out to be something like double that. Ordinarily, when government makes an estimate, you know, this is the government accounting office now, they say, well, we think that this is going to increase your gasoline tax over the term of this legislation by 77 cents a gallon. It'll probably be something more like, you know, $1.54 a gallon, just double that, and that's probably what it's going to turn out to be. So it'll take something more than 20% of your disposable income. It may take 40%. Boy, that's, you talk about a tax hike now. Now, there's a second factor that comes into play here. It should double every electric bill in the country. So whatever you're paying an electric bill, now my electric bill here on the ranch costs me about $2,500 a year. So, you know, if I'm average, it's now going to cost me $5,000 a year. Now, if you're burning gasoline at the rate like I am, you know, you drive about 15,000 miles a year and your car gets 20 miles to the gallon, let's, you know, just say that it gets 20. Mine doesn't. But with a carbon tax of $1 a gallon, 750 gallons turns out to be approximately $60 a month, a little over 60 bucks a month. That's, you know, around $700 a year in round numbers. So I'm going to get bumped about 700 bucks a year on running my car, and then I'm going to get bumped about $2,500 a year on my electric bill. Now, it could well be that electricity is too cheap, and it ought to be twice as much, and that gasoline is too cheap, and it ought to be 77 cents a gallon higher. I'm not here to argue with you. I'm just here to report to you that that's the numbers that they're giving us. Now, the taxes go to the government passed, of which will go to fund the United Nations and the International Monetary Fund. So this tax is earmarked for the United Nations and the International Monetary Fund. It's not earmarked now for parks and recreations or education in the United States or for any purpose for welfare, public schools, to make our children bigger, better, and brighter. That's not where this money's going. It's going to fund the United Nations and it's going to fund the International Monetary Fund. This bill has to be stopped in the Senate. Hit every senator with emails, phone calls, faxes, and letters, short and sweet. Do not vote yes on any legislation to limit greenhouse gas emissions such as the American Clean Energy and Security Act. That's the author here. That's not me. I'm going to put a little bracket around that. I'm not going to send a letter to my senator. Number one, the senators who are against it aren't going to vote for it, and the senators that are for it are going to vote for it, and 60 votes are going to go for it, bare minimum. Got that? So it's going to be passed. That's a foregone conclusion. If you want to write letters, go ahead and practice writing skills. But the deed is done. If you were going to stop it, it had to be stopped in the House. Didn't get stopped in the House, and that's the end of that argument. Now, there's going to be some repercussions that come out of this. And so I want to take a look at these repercussions. And then I want to take a look step by step at the lies, because I got a book in here the other day from the Heartland Institute. It's called Climate Change Reconsidered, the report of the Non-Governmental International Panel on Climate Control. So there's two panels. There's one that's called the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. That's sponsored by the government. They bought and paid for a bunch of scientific whores to give them the numbers and the answers that they wanted. And they got them. And they went out and they bandied them about, wrote some books, and then announced a new tax increase. Now, there's another side to the story. It's about an 850-page book. Let me flip back here to the back here and see how many pages we got here. That's 592, 765, 817, 850. That's pushing 900 pages. It's pretty big. The Heartland Institute sent me a copy. They're $154 each. Seems like it's a little on the pricey side. Most of you people probably won't want to spend $154. Those of you that do, it's well worth the money. It's an eye-opener. I took a look at it and I said, my God, I think it's worth $154 a copy. It's that big and it's got that much information. But nearly every conclusion arrived at by the government panel is a lie. For instance, the Arctic Ocean. Let me pass this little piece on to. I'm sitting here watching TV one night. I think it was on PBS or some. It could be Dateline. It could be 60 Minutes. I don't know. You know, some expose. And they showed a picture of the Arctic Ocean taken from a satellite back in 1978. And they said this was the ice coverage of the Arctic Ocean, and it covered the whole thing. I mean, you could look at the picture, and you could see Alaska and Siberia, and you could see Greenland. You know, they took a picture from up at the North Pole, and they shot it down from the satellite, and by God, the whole Arctic Ocean was covered with ice. And I said, ah, that's 1978. Then they showed a second picture taken in 2007. And this picture showed about, I'm going to say half of the Arctic Ocean covered by ice, and about half of it wasn't. Wow. And then they said, can you see the difference between picture A and picture B? Look at the global warming. Look at the difference in how much ice has disappeared from the Arctic Ocean and how this is going to create climate change that's going to affect us all, and we need to take action. It was really impressive, those two pictures. Now, here's what they didn't tell you. The 1978 picture was taken in January, and the 2007 picture was taken in August. Let me repeat that, just in case you missed it. The 1978 picture was taken in January, the coldest month of the year, at the North Pole, and it showed the whole Arctic Ocean covered by ice. But the second picture was taken in 2007 in August, which is the warmest month of the year, after all of the ice has been melted out, which is perfectly normal. About half of the Arctic Ocean melts in the summertime. What they're conveying to you is that there's been this great temperature rise, but the way they're doing it is jury-rigged. It's a lie, is what it boils down to. Now, there has been global warming. There's no two ways about it. We're in what's called a warming trend, which followed what was called the Little Ice Age. From 1550 to 1850 was a cold period. Cold period. From 1850 until today, the Earth has been warming up. And looking back at ice samples taken from Greenland and other places around the world, scientists have come to the conclusion over the last 2,000 or 3,000 years, there's been warm and cold periods, and they run about 300 to 600 years each. There was a warm period from around 600 to around 900 AD. Then there was a cold period from 1550 to 1850, and now we're in another warming period, and these periods last from 300 to 600 years, which have absolutely nothing to do with global warming or caused by greenhouse gases, which are being emitted by your refrigerator, chlorofluorohydrocarbons, or by carbon dioxide, or by burning gasoline in your automobile. Boys and girls, between 1850 and 1950, the Earth warmed up. Didn't have anything to do with the Industrial Revolution. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. Now, there's two groups of people here. One, a bunch of whores paid for by government, and the other is a bunch of scientists that have funded this book and this research out of their own pocket. So you need to ask yourself this question. Which of the two panels would be more believable? The government scientist who receives $1 million grant from the government to conduct his research, and if he turns in a report that says the world is getting warmer, next year he gets another $1 million. But if he turns in a report that says the Earth is not warming up and CO2 is not the culprit, he doesn't get his $1 million. Now, if you were a scientist, just put yourself in the scientist's position, and you're trying to get $1 million grant to conduct your research. If you give the government the report that they want, you get another $1 million next year and the year after and the year after that. If you give them a report that they don't want, they cut off your funding. How are you going to make your report? And then ask yourself, is that legitimate? Is that what we want? Is that unbiased? Now, if you got a scientist over here who's funding his research out of his own pocket, and he comes along and says, well, here's what I found, and I'm not going to get $1 million from anybody next year, one way or the other, but here's what I found. And he says, you know, I don't think CO2 has got anything to do with this. It is true the world is warming up, has been for the last 150 years, but it doesn't have anything to do with carbon dioxide, and doesn't have anything to do with the Industrial Revolution. And I'll show you some segments as we progress along as to why that is. But before we get into that, I gotta explore why it is that government wants this warm climate, this climate change, and why they wanted to sell it. And the answer is they wanted to sell it because they needed an excuse to raise your taxes. So they came along and they said, we've got to have a crisis. We have to have something equal to the Cold War. The Cold War is over, and we have to have something to take its place to create this emergency which will then give us the excuse to raise taxes so that we can tax, tax, and spend, spend. So, first of all, it was World War I, then it was World War II, then it was the Cold War, and now it's global warming. These are the excuses that have been used by government. Does it work? Like a shot. Works perfectly every time. They have never had a failure. They come to you and they propose a problem, and they say, my God, look at Germany, they're expansionists, and we got to do something about that. That brought on World War I. Then in 1930, said, my God, we got this depression going on over here, and look at these Germans again, we got to have a solution to this problem, said World War II. And these two wars generated god-awful profits. I mean, just really neat profits and high taxes and tax and spend. It just worked perfectly. But then after World War II ended, well, now what are we going to do to tax people and spend? Well, we had to come up with a threat. So it was the Soviet Union and nuclear weapons. And so they invented the Cold War, and they milked that one for, I don't know, $1 trillion or something like that. It was a goodly sum. Now, the Cold War ended, remember, 1989. So we have to come up with some new problem that we can confront the world with and say, now look at this problem needs to be solved, and it's going to take a lot of money to do that. So here's the way we got to do that. So they went out and they sold it. And they did a marvelous job, and it sold like a shot. And from the time they started, about 1990 until, you know, today, they've been at it for about 20 years, and now they've hit pay dirt. The biggest tax increase in history. Now, the general way or the modality that's being put together, the government's not going to come out and raise the gasoline tax by 77 cents a gallon. Because if the government raised your gasoline tax, you people would come unhinged. You'd get really angry. So what they do is they came up with this carbon tax. They're going to tax ExxonMobil, Shell, and ConocoPhillips. And corporations do not pay taxes. No corporation in the history of the world has ever paid a tax. Not a dime, not a nickel, not a penny. Never have, don't now, and never will. Corporations are tax collectors. They do collect a lot of tax, and they pay it over to the government. But they don't pay any tax. Nobody taxes corporations. So let me give you an illustration to that so that we can get our feet on the ground and understand something here about corporations and taxes. Back in the 1970s, I moved to Boise, Idaho, and one of the first things that came up was a proposal to tax the biggest employer, the biggest company in the state of Idaho. It's called Idaho Power Corporation. Now, you can understand this a little better in a small state like Idaho with less than 1 million people. The power company, Idaho Power Company, is the biggest corporation, biggest taxpayer, biggest of everything in the state. Which compared to San Francisco, California, is pretty small because the population of Idaho back in the 1970s was about the size of San Francisco. So it was working on about the same level as the city government of San Francisco. It's a little bit smaller for you to grasp. And the proposal was that Idaho Power Company is not paying their fair share of taxes. They're the biggest employer, the biggest moneymaker, biggest corporation in the state. They ain't paying their share. So somebody gets up in the legislature and says, Idaho Power Company needs to have their taxes raised. Then, as if on cue, Idaho Power Company starts taking out full-page ads in the Idaho Statesman. It says, Idaho Power Company is paying its fair share. You should not raise Idaho Power Company's taxes. We're a good neighbor. We're nice guys. Don't raise our taxes. And people weigh in on this. They write letters to the editor, and they get on the talk radio programs, and they talk, and they talk, and they talk, and people get really excited. They get their adrenaline flowing, and people are elected to office or voted out, depending upon their stand, on taxing Idaho Power Company. I mean, people get just really excited about Idaho Power. Now, when I first moved up there, this is about 1972, I was neutral because I didn't know anything about it. You know, I'm from California, what do I know about Idaho politics? And so after a long brouhaha, I mean, this thing went on for 3 or 4 months and there was full-page ads coming out. Now, in those days, it cost $8,000 a page to take out an ad. So Idaho Power Company every Sunday is taking out $16,000 worth of advertising in the Idaho Statesman, promoting their side of the story, which is don't raise our taxes. Makes all the sense in the world. And then the other side says, Idaho Power Company, they're rich, they're fat cats, they need to be taxed, and therefore they ought to be taxed now, let's tax them. When all the dust settled and the sky cleared up, the taxes were in fact raised. They passed the legislature, and Governor John Evans signed it. And so here we are with a tax increase in Idaho on Idaho Power Company. So I lived my life through the 1970s, and then about 1983, I guess it was, this thing came up again, about 10 or 12 years later. Here comes another, let's tax Idaho Power Company. And I thought, isn't this where I came into the movie? Isn't this the same place that I entered? And here again, we're full-page ads. Idaho Power Company is saying, hey, don't raise our taxes, we're a good neighbor. It sounded to me like the same replay of the 1972 story. And so some time went by, about 3 months went by. And the tax was increased, the tax was paid, and Idaho Power Company comes out with their two-page ad and says, well, the legislature has spoken, and the people of Idaho, through their representatives, have made their will known, and they've raised our taxes, and we'll shut up and pay them, and by God, we're going to be a good neighbor, you know, so Now, Idaho Power Company is a monopoly, and if you're going to buy electricity, you're going to buy it from Idaho Power. That's the end of the argument. Got that? You make your own electric power, but if you're going to buy it, you're going to buy it from Idaho Power Company. Now, some time went by, a couple, 3 weeks, and I was reading the Idaho Statesman, and on the legal notices page, you know, this is page 27, in the lower left-hand corner, as I was reading down the column, I saw a small ad, just a small notice in there. Not a big one, you know, like they're going to sell Juanita and Joe's house over here for non-payment of their taxes or non-payment of this or that. No. And this is just a little notice down here. It says, Idaho Power Company has petitioned the Public Utilities Commission for a rate increase, and here's what caught my eye, of 3.01776642.99% rate increase. Now, I'm exaggerating there. They only carried it out three or four places, but when I thought about my own business career, and I said, you know, if I was going to raise my prices, I'd raise them 3%, 4%, 5%. I might even raise my prices by 3.5% or 4.5% or something, but I wouldn't raise it 3.1649%. I looked at that four decimal places out there, and there was something that caught my eye and said, hey, there's something rotten here. This doesn't make sense. Why are they asking for this down to the decimal point? Why not just raise the rate 4%? Be done with it. So I mulled that over, and I took it into our Tuesday meeting, and I raised the question, and everybody was sitting there, you know, with their mouths open, gasping for air, and saying, we don't know, what the hell, so what? And I said, well, something's wrong here. I don't know what it is, but there's something right. So I was given the task of going down to Pete Santarusa and getting the Idaho Power Company charter. They were chartered back in 1911, so I did. I went in and got their charter, and I brought it back to the office, and I sat down, pretty good-sized piece of paper, and started reading the Idaho Power Company charter from 1911. What a revelation that was. I'll tell you what it was right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not its eight schools and all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Now, again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we are endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear in this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call the Law School Direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're back. Let's talk about Idaho Power Company and their charter. Now, remember, we're talking about climate change. Now, we have a House bill that has just been passed. The Senate is sure to follow, and the President's going to sign it. This is going to be the biggest tax increase in history. And it was orchestrated. It's been orchestrated now for 20 years, and it's now coming to fruition. And the people that have been orchestrating this have been working long and hard, and they have succeeded now in their goal. God love them. Now, their modality or their modus operandi is to tax the corporations, who in turn are going to pass that tax on to the consumers. Now, here's the trick. See, corporations don't pay taxes. Here's why. Idaho Power Company was chartered in 1911, and they are guaranteed by law an 8% profit. They cannot make 9, 10, 15, or 20%, nor can they make 5, 6, or 7%. The law mandates that Idaho Power Company is to make 8% profit per year. If for some reason their 8% target is low, no problem. They go to the Public Utility Commission and they say, give us a rate increase. And the rate increase that they petition for is never more than exactly what they need to make up the shortfall between what they're earning and what they're supposed to earn. On the other hand, if they make 9 or 10%, that's too much. The law doesn't allow them to make 9 or 10%. So then they have to lower their rates, or if they don't lower their rates, then they have to give you a refund or a rebate. So you might get a check in the mail for $10 or $20 or $50 or whatever it needs for each rate payer to get his refund back. Isn't that special? So when the power company petitioned Terry Swisher, he was the chairman of the Idaho Power, I mean the Idaho Power Commission, back in the 1980s, he was they were just doing exactly what the law prescribed. Nothing more, nothing less. Isn't that just real special? That's why they were asking for this odd number, 3.1724%, whatever it happened to be. Let me get my cough drop here in my mouth so I don't cough in your ear here. I'm going to lick my thumb. All right, now you're starting to get the drift of what's going on. Now, take a look at what just came down in the House. They've raised this carbon tax. They're going to put the CO2 emissions carbon tax on ExxonMobil. And what's ExxonMobil going to do? Well, there's a couple of factors that come into play here. Two factors. Listen to this. America's biggest oil companies will probably cope with the U.S. carbon legislation by closing fuel plants, cutting capital spending, and increasing imports. Now, what has your government been telling you about these imports? We've got to become energy independent. The President and the Congress said, hey, we got to have wind power. We got to have solar power. We got to have alternative energy sources. But when you put the 77-cent a gallon tax on ExxonMobil, they're going to increase their imports. They are going to close refineries. Why would they close refineries and increase imports? What's behind that? Well, under the Waxman-Markley climate bill that may be voted on today by the House, refiners would have to buy allowances for carbon dioxide spewed from their plants and from vehicles when motorists burn their fuel. Imports would need permits only for the latter, which ConocoPhillips Chief Executive Officer Jim Mulva said would create a competitive imbalance. So it will lead to the opportunity for foreign sources to bring in transportation fuel, just gasoline and diesel, at a lower cost, which will then have an adverse effect or impact upon our industry here in the United States. Potential shutdown of refineries and investment, and ultimately unemployment. Now Mulva's, M-U-L-V-A, Mulva said in a June 16th interview in Detroit, Houston-based ConocoPhillips has the second largest U.S. refining capacity. The same amount of gasoline would have a $1 carbon tax, a cost imposed if it were produced here in the United States, would have 10 cents less added to it if it were imported, according to the energy consulting firm Wood Mackenzie in Houston. So contrary to President Barack Obama's goal of reducing dependence on overseas energy supplies, the bill would give an incentive to U.S. refiners to import more fuel, said Clayton McAfee. He's an analyst at the Red Chip Companies in Maitland, Florida. So they'll be searching the globe for refined products that don't carry the same level of carbon tax, said McAfee, a former Exxon Corporation refinery manager. Prices are seen to be rising. The equivalent of one in six U.S. refineries probably would close by 2020, as the cost of carbon allowances erases profits. And according to the American Petroleum Institute, a Washington trade group known as API, carbon permits would add 77 cents a gallon to the price of gasoline, said Russell Jones, the API's senior economic advisor. Now, depending upon what kind of a bill comes out of the Senate, see, the Senate may pass a tax that's higher than that or lower than that, and then they have to go to what they call a House-Senate Conference Committee to work out the final numbers. Notice this. We haven't built a new oil refinery in this country in about 40 years. And we're not going to build any more in this country. We're going to close one in six of the existing refineries. Huh? Talk about energy independence now, huh? Hey, wait a minute. This isn't a program to rebuild the economy. This is a program designed to bury it, destroy it. And all this money that's been borrowed so far, $29.1 trillion so far, since last August or September of 2008, so far has stabilized the stock market to run between about 8,000 and 8,500. And has slowed the unemployment rates from about 600,000 to about 300,000 or 400,000. So it is doing some good. It is slowing the deterioration, but it isn't solving the problem, nor can it, nor will it. Okay, so let's wake up and smell a coffee here. Now, going back to Idaho Power Company, the exact same program is being implemented here with this carbon tax that was implemented in Idaho. Now, they came up with a real neat story in a county called Shoshone County. Idaho Power Company said, We are the biggest taxpayer in Shoshone County. 64% of all of the tax revenue raised by the county is paid by Idaho Power Company. Excuse me? Excuse me. Where did Idaho Power Company get the money to pay the tax? I hear people all the time, they're saying, well, my employer pays 9.6% of my Social Security tax. My employer pays all of my unemployment tax. My employer pays this, my employer pays that. That's not true. I'm an old-timey employer, and I'm here to tell you that as an employer, I never paid 10 cents, 5 cents, or 1 penny of tax on any employee, and I never met an employer that ever did. There may be one or two out there, but if there are, they're well hidden. You see, I was running a plumbing company called the Gordon Building Maintenance Company, and I had a shop rate, and my shop rate was $12 an hour. And I paid my employees about $3 an hour, or $4 an hour, and some of them $5 an hour. I might even have one or two at $6 an hour, depending on their skills and ability. And yes, it's true that I made deductions from my employees' paychecks. And it is true that I matched those payments. And it is true that I sent it into the IRS, but it is not true that George Gordon or the Gordon Building Maintenance Company ever paid a dime in payroll tax. I may wake up. Now today, the price of shop labor over here at the DX station is $25 an hour, and I think that Mike's getting paid about $10 an hour, and I think that the owner's getting paid about $10 an hour, and then the $5 an hour that the customer is paying in here goes for these payroll taxes. I've explained this to you before, the ratio that employers and employees expect. It's priced in, and the customer pays. That's the bottom line. It's the consumer that pays. It's not Idaho Power Company that pays this tax. If the legislature wanted to tax the people of Idaho, they'd pass a per capita tax and say everybody in the state of Idaho has to pay $5 into the state coffers. And they don't do that. That'd make you people mad. They tax the power company, and the power company, who last month charged you $40 a month for your power, now charges you $45 a month. And then as next year comes along, they'll raise it to $50 a month and then $55 a month. Now, this tax doesn't come into effect full force on day one. So you're not going to see the prices on your gas pump go up 77 cents 3 weeks after this has passed. That isn't going to happen. No. Slowly but surely, as time progresses and these taxes kick in, and ExxonMobil and Shell and ConocoPhillips and the rest of them start looking at their balance sheet, they say, oh, my God, we're paying out X number of million dollars a month in tax. Therefore, we're producing X number of millions of gallons of gasoline. So therefore, here's what the new rate increase has to be. That's all. And so you'll see the price at the pump go up by 2 cents. And then 3 cents, and then 5 cents, and then 4 cents, and then 5 cents, and so on, until ultimately it reaches 77 cents, just like it did last year. Remember when prices were going up every day on your gas pump until the price of gas got up to $4? Same thing is coming. And the same thing is going to come on your power bill. And remember, the excuse for doing this is what? Carbon tax. Hey, listen, global warming. Hey, wait a minute. The Arctic Ocean is melting. Polar bears are dying. We're getting storms, you know, like Hurricane Katrina. And storm surges, and a deficiency of snow, and a temperature rise, and wildfires are increasing, and there's droughts everywhere, and there's floods and hurricanes, and the sea level is rising. And we need carbon sequestration. And listen, coral reefs are threatened. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Just looking down the pages here, you got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 problems. 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 is about 60 problems, and they run like this. Cosmic rays, irradiation, temperature, precipitation, droughts, floods, monsoons, stream flows. And then there's plant productivity responses, water use efficiency, acclimatization, competition, respiration, carbon sequestration, other benefits, and greening of the earth, and so on. I mean, they've got about 60 or 70 subject matters in here. I'm just going to hit the tip of the iceberg. And I want to expose some of this. You know, I want to point out to you that the coral reefs are not disappearing because of climate change. Tain't happening. It's what they're saying is happening. Because that's what we needed to do. We needed to stampede you. We had to get you excited. We had to show you that coral reefs are disappearing. And they show you pictures of a dead or dying coral reef. Look at this coral reef. It's dying because of carbon dioxide. All right, now, you and I are plumbers, carpenters, and electricians. Hell, I don't know if that thing is dying because of carbon dioxide or because of excessive this or that or something else. I don't know. So Will Rogers used to say, hell, I don't know any more than I read in the papers. Now, according to the IPCC, many studies incontrovertibly link coral bleaching to warmer sea surface temperature. The mass bleaching and coral mortality often results beyond key temperature thresholds. Modeling, the IPCC goes on to say, predicts a phase switch to algal dominance on the Great Barrier Reef and Caribbean reefs in 2030 to 2050. The IPCC further claims that coral reefs will also be affected by rising atmospheric CO2 concentrations, resulting in declining calcification. Right, now, that's what the government and the government scientists reported. And you and I come along and we read that and we say, oh, my God. Now, there's another group of scientists came along and said, well, let's take a look at the data. And they come to this conclusion. They said there is no simple linkage between high temperatures and coral bleaching. As living entities, corals are not only acted upon by the various elements of their environment, they also react or respond to them. And when changes in environmental factors pose a challenge to their continued existence, they sometimes take major defensive or adaptive actions to ensure their survival. A particularly ingenious way that coral responds to environmental stress is to replace the, something or other here, zoanthellae expelled by coral or the coral host during a stress-induced bleaching episode by one or more varieties of zooxanthellae that are more tolerant of the stress that caused the bleaching. And the persistence of coral reefs through geologic time, when temperatures were as much as 10 to 15 degrees centigrade warmer than at present. All right, pause. Did you know that there were times in the past when atmospheric temperature was 10 to 15 degrees centigrade? Now, how much has global warming affected our temperature so far? 0.75 degrees centigrade so far. Since 1850, the average air temperature worldwide has gone up by less than 1°C. But in times past, it's been 10 to 15 degrees hotter. Well, the world survived the last time, and the last time it happened, nobody complained and said it was caused by automobile emissions or ExxonMobil or Shell back in 600 to 900 AD, did they? So right away, our common sense ought to tell us that, well, wait a minute, if the temperature in the past, there were times in the past when it was 10 to 15 degrees warmer, well then, didn't all of the glaciers melt? Didn't all of the coral reefs disintegrate and weren't they destroyed? No, sir, they weren't. Well, how can that happen? Now, we'll take a look at these glaciers. You know, they're out here taking pictures of glaciers, and it is true. I read the story here on glaciers up on Kilimanjaro. There's a glacier up there. In fact, there's three big glaciers on three big mountains in Africa, and they're all melting faster than they're disintegrating. They're disappearing. No doubt about it. So the question arises, well, is that caused by higher temperatures? And the answer is no, it's not. How do you like that? And that's because up there where the glaciers are, the temperature is always below 0°C. It's always frozen. And if it's always frozen, then it isn't evaporating. So what is it that's causing the degeneration? Lack of precipitation. Lack of precipitation. Well, is the precipitation less now because of global warming? The answer is no, no. Now, there have been big climatic changes in the past that are recorded and documented in the sedimentary rocks and in the sediments underneath lakes and in ice samples taken from the glaciers and the ice fields. And scientists look at those and they come to conclusions. Scientists that are being bribed with $1 million or $5 million a year rewards and grants are telling the story that the government wants them to tell in order to sell this tax increase. And the scientists that aren't on the take are telling it like it is and saying, well, that isn't the story that the documentation gives us. That isn't true. Concentrations were 2 to 7 times higher than they are currently, and it provides substantive evidence that these marine entities can successfully adapt to a dramatically changing global environment. Thus, the recent die-off of many corals cannot be due solely or even mostly to global warming or the modest rise in atmospheric CO2 concentrations over the course of the Industrial Revolution. The 18 to 59 centimeter warming induced sea level rise that is predicted for the coming century by the IPCC, which could be greatly exaggerated if predictions of CO2 induced global warming are wrong, falls well within the range of 2 to 6 millimeters per year of typical coral vertical extension rates, which exhibited a model value of 7 to 8 millimeters per year during the Holocene and can be more than double that value in certain branching corals. Rising sea levels should therefore present no difficulties for coral reefs. In fact, rising sea levels may have a positive effect on coral reefs, permitting increased coral growth in areas that have already reached the upward limit imposed by current sea levels. Now, there's a conclusion that comes from this part of the article. It tells us that further evidence that high or low seawater temperatures per se are not the critical factors in producing coral bleaching is provided by Podesta and Glynn in their study in 1997 when they examined a number of temperature-related indices of surface waters in the vicinity of Panama over the period from 1970 to 1994. Their analysis revealed that for the 2 years of highest maximum monthly sea surface temperature, 1972 and 1983, coral bleaching was reported only in 1983, while 1972 produced no bleaching whatsoever, in spite of the fact that water temperatures that year were just as high as they were in 1983. Now, additional information on this topic, including reviews of newer publications as they become available, may be found at www.co2science.org, subject bleachingtemp.php. Every single one of these articles, about 60 or 70 of them in here now, are covered on the internet free of charge, and you can go look these up. So that instead of paying $154 for the book, I mean, if you want to do this on the cheap, then write this down. It's www.co2science.org. It's all there is to it. No big mystery. www.co2science.org/subject/c/bleachingtemp.php. I'm sure you can find it if you can just get to the site. Now, they also will have all 60 or 70 of these studies on things like the Arctic Ocean, where they will show you the 1978 and 2007 pictures and how they were jury-rigged to deceive you. Polar bears. There are more polar bears today than there was 25 years ago. The polar bear population is increasing. What they do is they go to a location where the polar bear population is decreasing, and then they say, look, polar bear population is decreasing. Then they don't tell you about the other areas where the polar bear population is increasing, which on balance gives you a net increase rather than a net decrease. It's kind of like Ozark County. Look, the population of Ozark County has decreased since 1940. Therefore, the population of the United States is heading toward collapse. While it's true that the population of this county decreased by 4,000 people between 1940 and 2009, it is not true that the population of the United States has collapsed. And that's junk science. And that's what's being perpetrated upon us. Junk science. All right, we're talking about climate change BS. And you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. Got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.